A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 1, 2000, in the series The Heart of the Matter, entitled A Charter of Freedom, A Matter of Choice. The texts for the sermon are Joshua 4, verses 1 through 7, and 24, verses 14 and 15, and 1 Corinthians 3, verses 10 through 23. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Today I'm announcing my retirement. It'll be 5 years from some future date, not yet determined. But as for today, this is the first day of the rest of my ministry, and I am starting all over again. And having heard Peter and Cynthia, you know why I'm smiling, because I too believe that the best is yet to be. It was about 10 years ago out at St. Lazare's when the team was gathered. I was feeling somewhat old and they were all young. They were talking about music I'd never heard of and ideas that I couldn't comprehend. And finally I said, all right then, let's just throw the pieces up and let them come down one more time. Well, they came down in pretty good fashion for a decade, but nothing lasts forever. And I know that I won't be able to start over too many more times, but I'm starting over this morning. And I am more excited and more fascinated and more confident than any time in my life that the best is yet to be. Human experience is historical experience. History moves. There are no absolutes. There are no resting places. You can pause occasionally. There's an oasis here or there. But the stream of life inevitably flows on, and we with it. Willy-nilly, against the tide, or flowing with it. The fact is, history moves. And history is marked by significant moments. Joshua knew that. Israel had been given a charter of freedom when they were sprung loose from the slavery of Egypt under the leadership of Moses. And then after that torturous wilderness wandering, Joshua received the mantle. And as he led Israel into the promised land through the Jordan River, he said, take 12 stones and set up a pillar in the camp where you'll camp tonight, your first night in the promised land. And let it be a memorial forever to mark this occasion, this crossing, this new beginning. So that in the future when your children say, what are those stones? You will be able to tell them the story. Life inevitably moves on and significant moments need to be marked. St. Paul was as committed and passionate a Jew as has ever breathed. But one day he got a grander vision. He began to see that that marvelous particularity, which was his heritage, had the capacity to become a universal word, a word of good news for the whole world. And he went about founding congregations here and there, one of which was Corinth. They were a squabbly bunch, and he had to write them. And in the lesson we read a moment ago, he said to them, you know, you're spiritually immature because you don't really get it. You don't get the big picture. Some of you say, well, I'm for Apollos, and others, well, I'm for Paul, and others, I'm Peter's man. And actually, what you're doing is absolutizing the relative and the partial. For don't you know that all things are yours? Don't you know that the whole world is yours? Don't you know that the future is yours? Paul is yours, Apollos is yours, Peter is yours, milk them for all you can. But don't stay with any one of them. Don't let your sights be narrowed down to a particular focus, but take in the grand vista of the whole world which is yours. Life and death, future, present, all is yours. You have a charter of freedom because you belong to Christ who belongs to God, which means you are rooted in the eternal. You are a part of the totality of things. You belong to God, the God whose heart you've seen in the face of Jesus. 2 weeks ago, the pilgrims who went with me to Europe gathered in St. Peter's Square with some 40,000 others for a mass celebrated by the Pope himself. And it was a wonderful serendipity, a wonderful experience. But the one thing it kept us from doing was going into the Basilica on Sunday, where we could have spent some time at leisure. And if we had had leisure time there, I would have taken the group over to a great stone monument of sorts, in which is inscribed in concrete the names of all the popes, beginning, of course, with Peter. And we went out to the catacombs on Monday and went down the Appian Way, which is the way that Paul traveled from the Mediterranean into that great city. And we walked where the Caesars rode their chariots and the apostle proclaimed good news. And that history is magnificent. I remember in 84, this is sick, Nancy and I spent 6 hours in St. Peter's on a Sunday. Just the leisure time to go into every nook and cranny. And that's when we found that great tablet in stone. I remember saying to myself, thank God for the Roman church. Thank God that church is here. In all of its dogmatism and all of its obscurantism and all of its authoritarianism, thank God it's here. There's a record of it. They had to patch in a few popes. The historical record isn't clean, but you get the point. Peter, and on down to Pope John II. And that great church, down through the centuries, was the mediator of the grace of God. On Monday, we went to the Church of St. John Lateran, which when it was built, they had to build a chapel across the way for the Pope's chapel. And in that Pope's chapel, they had a stairway. And that was the stairway that they got from Jerusalem, which was the stairway of Pontius Pilate, that Jesus went up for judgment. Now, if you believe that, I'll tell you some other things, too. It's not the point. The point is that stairway is called the Scala Sancta, the Sancta Scala, the Holy Steps, because the tradition says those are the steps that Jesus ascended to Pilate for judgment. And the pilgrims ever since have gone on their hands and knees up those steps, saying their prayers, asking for forgiveness. Martin Luther made his way to Rome, that German monk who had so much spiritual disease, who was looking for a God of peace and mercy. And Luther going up those steps seeking mercy. But he couldn't find it. And finally, in the life of that monk, the spirit erupted into a newness that we call the Protestant Reformation. 16th century. Shattering of the church institution. And yet, a setting forth, a liberating of the gospel in a new and fresh way. That 16th century church was a fire. It was renewed, it was revived, it was alive. Only to be codified in the 17th century. The doctrines carefully delineated, the church polity written out, the liturgical forms all set. And in 1971, when I came back to this congregation, it was pretty much like the 17th century. In terms of creedal forms, liturgical forms, the polity of the church. For the Protestant Reformation had done, what had happened to the Protestant Reformation is what always happens, if you think about it. It's so interesting. It's absolutely fascinating. The bold new move, that breakthrough, that fresh expression, becomes codified, absolutized, and perpetuated as though it is the last word. Every new reformer is finally denied by those who think he or she is wonderful and follow in his or her steps. Every new breakthrough finally becomes the way it is and is perpetuated as the last word. It happens over and over and over again, but it never works because the stream of history moves on. And every historical circumstance continues to call for new answers, new questions, new solutions, new circumstances, new times, calling for new ways of doing things. And so, in 1971, when I returned here, there hadn't been an awful lot of movement since the 17th century in the Protestant church at large. And of course, the old Catholic church just kept on running. But I had fun this week. I was thinking about this particular text of Paul because it was the text that I used on May 23, 1971, in an evening service in this congregation, in which I proposed that we change our name from the First Reformed Church of Spring Lake to Christ Community Church. I went back into my file, not knowing if there was anything there or not. I found this precious treasure. That's the sermon. And what a sermon it is. I went back over it and I was blessed all over again. Well, as a matter of fact, if I had the time, I'd read it all to you. It's so fascinating because it was this text in which I proposed the name change, and the week following, we had a congregational meeting, and we voted after 101 years to change the name of the church from the First Reformed Church to Christ Community Church. The vote was 120-4. Those four left. No, they didn't really. I'm just kidding here. But it was a wonderful time of excitement and new vision, of energy. And we got the larger picture. I was, as I proposed it to the people, I said, from Paul's text, take the truths and insights of all men, Peter, Cephas, Apollos, take the truths and insight of all, but absolutize none. You are Christ. The question before us is whether or not we have the courage at this juncture in the history of the church to take a bold step and identify ourselves with a fresh movement of God's Spirit. Do we believe God not only spoke in days past, but that God also speaks today? Is it possible that changes as sweeping and significant could occur today as those that happened in the 16th century? And then I went on to talk about how heavily laden we are with the past, and that fact isn't bad in itself, but nonetheless, those statements that came out of the past in that rich period of renewal and revival, those statements were not timeless and eternal statements of the truth, but much rather timely statements of the truth according to the best understanding of the truth in the light of the historical situation. Well, have I been a Johnny One-Note or not? I mean, it's been 30 years and I've been hammering this thing. As I read this, I remark about the fact that I've been so narrowly focused, but that's the way it is. Do we dare declare ourselves to be the church of the 21st century? I said that 30 years ago. Do we dare declare ourselves to be the church of the 21st century? A church that has stopped deliberately and consciously to decide what it's going to be, and then names itself in terms not of a historical accident of the past, a factor of secondary importance, but according to its essence, as a prophecy of what by God's grace we shall become. 1971. And I must have gone through it another time, and there's just a couple other things I want to read here. The name Christ Community Church of Spring Lake is our opportunity to name the name that will provide the vision for the future church that will shape the history of Spring Lake. When Spring Lake Baptist, Spring Lake Christian Reformed, Spring Lake Presbyterian, the Catholic Church, and the Methodists join us, then we will have Christ Community. Someone should dare dream great dreams and set visionary goals for Spring Lake. Why not us? We ought not to be concerned to make Spring Lake Reformed, but we ought to be concerned to make Spring Lake Christ. We ought not to be concerned to make Spring Lake Reformed, but we ought to seek to make it a community, Christ's community in Spring Lake. We are not here to compete with other churches, but rather to invite others to do as we are doing, laying aside the things that separate us, that we may emphasize the things that unite us. I see the church of the future being the church that gathers people into a caring community around Jesus Christ. The church of the future will be the community church, making its impact strongly in the radius of 5, 10, 50 miles with the resources to minister around the world. If we cannot merge great denominational structures, at least we can stop promulgating them. The focus of ecumenicity must be local, and so forth. Well, this is fun. I cannot give my life to the preservation of anything, be it ever so great, but I can get excited about giving my life to the propagation of the gospel, of telling people everywhere that God was in Christ, that God is like Jesus, that God graciously forgives, receives, loves, and keeps. Well, dear friends, I could preach it all over again today, but I want to tell you, as I read that, I realize how naive I was, how cocky I was, how triumphalistic I was. But it's happened. And the dream has come true to a large extent, so that we represent a diverse community of blended traditions of people of all stripes in a community church that has lost a lot of the heavy baggage of institutionalization and is poised on the threshold of the future with a charter of freedom, the choice before us to become even more of what we have been becoming. If you would like to trace whether or not we've been on target, then I would suggest, you know those little things that hold these folders out around the church? This one is Dreaming the Future. Have you ever read it? Have you ever taken a look at it? Here's the vision statement of 1971. This is the vision statement of 1980. This is the vision statement of 1993. If you read this, you will see a consistent pattern from our beginning in 71 when we changed our name in order to change our image, in order to say something new. You'll find a consistent line of development in this little brochure. And then if you want to know why our worship has been what it is, why we have maintained so-called high church worship, why we have continued to cultivate that sense of awe, that sense of the transcendent, that sense of the holy, then take this little one, worship, and read the last panel, The Mystery of Worship. Worship is not entertainment. We offer ourselves to God, yet the circle is not complete unless God moves us, touches our lives, meets us. There seems to be a frenzy of activity in the larger church, trendy innovation and transient fads aimed at catching people's attention, luring them to worship. The concern is proper, yet to aim at experience for experience's sake lacks staying power because it is without a dynamic generating center. Aim an experience and one comes up empty. Struggle for truth or reality and one will experience wonder. My dear friends, this is the first day of the rest of my ministry. And I am convinced, as of yesterday's press, when a religious news reporter goes to a conference and hears where things are from those who are looking it all over, as Peter and Cynthia said, we are there. We have been struggling to get there. And it's been a struggle because we have an intellectual tradition, a theological tradition, a grand tradition, a great tradition with which we have wrestled. We have refused to go that empty way of simply trying to stir people's emotions, trying to do the surface stuff that's trendy, innovative. Nothing cute here. Heavy stuff, meat and potatoes. On purpose, intentionally, with self-awareness, with deliberate intentionality. Because if we are engaged in the spiritual quest, then we seek God after all. If we worship, then we worship God after all, the All-Holy One. Then if together we seek understanding, and now and again a breakthrough, then we'll be able to connect the lives we live every day, our contemporary lives, with that ancient spiritual quest. The sociologist Wade Clark Roof calls this a quest culture. In this little Dreaming the Future brochure, you'll see quest and question out of the early 90s. The logo of our center is Q&Q, not Q&A. This is not a place to come with your questions to get answers. This is a place to come with your questions and quest, because the spiritual life is not arriving. The spiritual life is an ongoing pilgrimage. It is a quest, clarifying the questions. And it's an exciting business. It's so fascinating, because down deep in the human heart, there is a vacuum, there's a hole that only God can fill. But it cannot be the God who is defined in ancient creeds. We can hear the old stories. We can appreciate the pilgrimage of those who've gone before us. But the future is ours. All things are ours. Peter, Apollos, Cephas, Paul, all things are yours. Luther, Calvin, Wesley, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, name what you will. The world is ours. We have a charter of freedom, and that's now upon us to make a choice to determine what we will become in order that our lives may be full and rich and vibrant, spiritually alive. We may not have changed the name of this church for the last time, for God's sake. Who would die? Who would argue for Christ's community? You would be arguing against the very principle by which this congregation changed the name 30 years ago. If there's a better name, let's find it. Like Iacocca said years ago, if you can get a better deal, take it. If you find a better name, name it. We've not brought another ordained clergyman in this place. I believe in clergy people. They're like manure. Spread thinly over the field, create fruitfulness, but all in one place. Mm-mm. We brought an academic dean in here. We brought, a provost, a chancellor. This is going to be the school of Christ for the 21st century. This is a place that knows not yet what form it will take. But this is the first day of the rest of my ministry. And I will retire 5 years from some future date not yet determined.